As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh, my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field! It is out of here!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 81 of The Roundtable. I'm Grant Brisby, here with Andy McCullough and Mark Carrig. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm glad to be here, Grant.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I can feel the good vibes already. Andy, how are you doing?
Can't you?
I'm great. I'm glad to be here, Grant.
Are you rested?
No.
No.
I took a 19-hour flight from Singapore. I got off the plane at like 6 in the morning and, you know, I'm here, man. I'm fired up. I'm ready to go.
This is loopy Andy. Like, loopy McCullough's the best McCullough. You can get bitter McCullough. You can get McCullough with the ass that you can see from space. But loopy McCullough, there's just something about that. I got good vibes from this one. All right, so let's see. Baseball, it's...
Oh, okay. You guys don't want to ask about my trip? That's fine. Yeah, no.
Great. I didn't know how much you wanted to share.
No, that's fine.
Did you have some pho? No.
I had some pho, yeah.
What was your favorite pho?
There was a pho gars in Hanoi that was really good. And there was a pho Thai in Saigon that was also really great. My wife and I went on our honeymoon in Vietnam, for the listeners. But yeah, no one cares. No, fine. Let's talk about Pakoda.
I care.
That's more important than my life.
On a baseball podcast, yeah. Yeah, it kind of is. But
this
go ahead, Mark.
This podcast barely acknowledges baseball. Baseball is like the art form that we use to, you know, sort of get metaphysical. Am I right?
I'll bring some baseball to this as someone who's been to 29 of 30 current major league parks. I'll tell you what is an underrepresented food group in the concessions. It's Vietnamese. Vietnamese food is wonderful. And I've always wanted to like start like a concession stand, and I would call it Ball Pho.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I like it. I like it. Ball Pho.
You're in, right?
Yeah.
You're in.
I'm in for 25%.
Oh yeah. All right. We'll get the paperwork done after this. Let's hurry through.
At least we have a plan if journalism doesn't work out.
Jeez, man. Our boy's back. He's back.
Boy, oh boy. Well, just because I can't get this out of my head, so I have to right now. Danny Graves. Okay, let's now move on to baseball talk. The player born in Vietnam. Like, I have to, like, it's rattling around in my head. So
Danny Graves was born in Vietnam?
Yes, sir. Yeah, so it was just bouncing around in my head, so I had to get that out. Baseball stuff, yeah, I mean, great, your trip. You know, I haven't left the country in, like, 25 years, but you know, whatever. Good for you.
Grant, you need to chill, man. It's not my fault your team hasn't spent any money.
Man, no, they're waiting for the 60-day IL to open up. That's my new working theory. Welcome to the 49ers Roundtable, episode 81. Famously, that's Terrell Owens' number for both the Eagles and the 49ers. One of those teams is playing in the Super Bowl. Oh boy, it's not the Eagles.
I was on a plane in Vietnam, and when I had reception, it was like, wow, the Niners are getting their asses kicked by the Lions. And then we landed, and I was just like thinking up all these jokes I was going to have. You know, I was just going to torch Grant. And then we landed, and I checked the score, and I was like, well, what the heck happened?
Yeah, it was – so I watched the Packers-Niners game here with my family around me. And for the Lions-Niners game, they left on purpose because of how I acted during the night. So, like, they have not had a clean run to the Super Bowl, and I'm confined to the room now for the Super Bowl. I can't even watch it with my family. So, but that's where we're at right now.
Because you're going to have so many takes about Taylor Swift?
Because I regress. Yeah, right. I regress, and I become one of those guys like, let's go!
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on. Gotta hit that seam. You know, and like it drives my wife nuts because she, you know, explicitly set out to not marry that guy. And she did for the most part. But, you know, I get like that with football.
Like when I see a fumble, I just immediately go, ball.
That's the old lineman.
Yeah, that's just, you know, like a childhood and, you know, adolescence spent playing football. When you see the ball, you just ball, you know.
You notice how your Philly accent comes roaring back when you talk about football. Like, you just did it. Like, it's like listening to, like, you know, Kylie Kelsey. Like, like it's the same, like, whoa.
Well, the thing is like, playing football was like my personality, basically, until I stopped playing football, you know, after my high school career, you know, after my senior year. Like, your personality is just like, I play on the football team. And that's basically all that, you know.
And now your personality is, I've had several concussions. So, like, it's still, it's bleeding into the present.
Yeah. Now my personality is, I covered the Kansas City Royals.
There it is.
Hey, there was a trade. Corbin Burns got traded. That was interesting.
Was the last podcast that we had where we semi-excoriated the Orioles for not doing
much? I defended the Orioles.
Okay.
I defended the Orioles because what my argument was, and I love pointing out when I'm right because it happens so often, so I like pointing this out, is that, you know, there's no clock, right?
No clock.
No, you make clock that in move baseball. In December, you make that move in February, you get the player, and you know, apparently the two teams have been working on it for quite some time. They finally got it over the finish line. I like the trade for both teams. I get it. Like, if you're a Brewers fan, it just sucks. Like, it sucks. There's no way, if you're a Brewers fan, to, like, feel great about it. But I think in terms for 1 year, even of an elite-type player, they got two pretty legit prospects plus a fairly high draft pick. That feels like a pretty good return. How can you dislike this deal for the Orioles, right? Like, they got Corbin Burns. That's awesome. Like, good for them. I, you know.
When you have prospects coming out of your ears, you make a trade like this.
Yeah, you know, Ortiz was a guy who, like, I frankly did not know a ton about and kind of, you know, talked to a couple folks and, like, looked into his numbers. Like, oh, this guy's great. Like, he could play nowhere for the Orioles, you know. Like, he's completely blocked at all three, you know, infield positions.
Keith Law had him really high on his top 100 list, like top 50, I want to say, above Marco Luciano. Like, he was up there, even though he's 25, but you can't hold that against him because the Orioles didn't really have a place for him.
Yeah. And you know, the Brewers people seem to like DL Hall, and they think that he can be a starter. And, you know, so if you're telling, you know, you're getting theoretically 6 years of DL Hall and, you know, 6 years of Joey Ortiz and, you know, for 1 year of Burns, it sucks if you're the Brewers. To have to make these sorts of trades. But hey, they've been doing it for, you know, quite some time and being okay with it.
DL Hall sounds like a defensive back name. Like, he's a speedy corner, third round corner out of Austria.
Yes.
But also, he's glad that they changed the deal to the IL because those, like, if he can't, you know, if he's got a career that where it's a lot of injuries, that would suck.
Well, he has dealt with them in his career. And so, you know, maybe now they've changed it to the IL. It's time for DL
to step up,
hit the ASG. I don't know.
I'm sorry.
I was on a 19-hour flight. You ever take a 19-hour flight? It's long.
I took a 19-hour flight to Moscow once. back when I was in high school, and it's still the USSR. But that's a story for another time. Mark, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
No, I just listening to you guys' world travels. Like, it's a nice view from the, you know, first world. So, like, you know, 19-hour flights to Moscow and Vietnam, that's great. You know, it's wonderful. I can tell you about the time I went to Tijuana. Anyone want to hear that? No?
I think there's a lot of problems with that.
That is problematic.
You live in a New Jersey mansion. What are you talking about?
That is not a mansion.
I live in a one-bedroom.
And the cat takes the bed. He sleeps on the couch.
I live in a one-bedroom. I can't put my cat anywhere so that I can sleep through the night.
That was honestly, my cat had meowing problems in the middle of the night when I moved from an apartment to this house. And the first night he meowed, and I was like, oh, check this out, a garage. Fump. And he never meowed again. It was amazing. He's like, oh, crap, they got plans now. So just buy a house, bootstraps.
Yeah, just right. Make yourself indispensable. Let's go.
Oh,
let's go. Keep going. Just keep going.
All right.
We're having fun here on the pod.
Corbin Burns, I like it for the Orioles. I don't know. It seems like it was the only possible move for them in a way, but I keep going back to, yes, they've got prospects bleeding out of their ears. They've got all these young players. I think they can afford, like, again, this is me talking, and I'm not exactly of the Angelos family or the new owners coming in, but it feels like they can afford a bad contract for the next few years because they're going to have all these underpaid guys subsidizing that.
Totally could afford it. There's very little in their MO that suggests that they're going to want to do that. You know, and maybe the new new ownership group is more
Cohen-ish. Like,
yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, they come from that sort of world. Yeah, I guess you could do a bad deal, but like, I like their strategy if you're going to be aggressive in situations like this. I like, you know, holstering the prospects and going after Corbin Burns rather than, you know, and in the other times, you know, picking up number fours and number fives and Ballast and, you know, not giving $100 million to a number three starter. Or number four. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I get you.
You can do it both ways. You can do it both ways.
Yeah, I get you. I mean, this kind of dovetails into what we're going to talk about. We're a baseball prospectus. They released their Pecota projections, their Pecota standings, projected standings. And first off, people get so mad about projections and projected standings. And it's like, if you look at them the right way, they're just fun. They're just taking the players on the team. Here's what they did in the past, spitting out the numbers. And it's just, it's a fun exercise. It's not a prediction. It's not a crystal ball. So take it for what it is. And I just think it's fascinating that the Orioles are kind of in the middle of the pack. What were they? 87 wins?
86. Yeah. 86.6
wins. Yeah. So, I mean, it's which is, I would think it has a lot to do with regressing to the mean, sort of like after that big bullpen bump up to 100. Yeah. It's stuff like that. But it's just, it's interesting to see of the teams that could use like one more Blake Snell or one Cody Bellinger, like where does that move the needle? There's a lot of teams in baseball where they can use that one weird free agent trick to get a little bit better and separate themselves.
So I think the one thing that we should look at with the Orioles right now is, when have you known people to make a big splash, buy into a baseball team, have a controlling interest and not want to flex a little bit right afterward? Okay. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that like you're throwing money, like, you know, money at people that, you know, making intentionally bad decisions. But I think there's a human part of this. Like, you've just bought the club. Like, who does that to then just sit there and not spend money on it?
New sheriff in town.
I think, you know, like, yeah, there's, and like, you know, you can sit there and laugh about it, whether it's good or bad, and do the analysis or whatever. But sometimes human nature wins out. And when you look at this sport, by the way, there's plenty of examples of this particular thing happening. All right. That, like, a lot of times you will see people, you know, get really excited and just sort of go at it. And like Steve Cohen is sort of the extreme example of this. But I think we've seen this phenomenon take place more than once. Right. So am I saying that's going to automatically happen here with the Baltimore Orioles? No. But am I saying that historically when you know, well-heeled owners buy in, like, is there such a phenomenon of sort of riding that wave and getting excited and sort of, I guess there's a political aspect of this too. You want to show your fan base that, you know, build some goodwill and all that. It wouldn't be shocking if they went and did something like that. I mean, to me, I don't know. Like, it just seems like, again, the human nature of it, timing, wanting to get the goodwill from, like, a new fan base seems to line up for, hey, I wouldn't rule that out.
Can I tell you what kind of owner I would be? I would dress like Roger Stone. You know what I mean? Like, I'd like the Riddler, like, I'd have maybe a cane with, like, a crystal on top. And I would be very present in all the games, and I would just spend all of my fortune. Like, literally just spend all of it. So if anyone wants to back me in that endeavor, I would be your guy. If that sounds like fun to you, like Kickstarter, Patreon, stuff like that. All right, sorry. but honestly, I agree that now's the time if the Orioles are getting... I don't know when the deal actually goes through. I'm not as Wolver, you know, I'm not Drolich. I don't know when it's going through, when the papers are going to be signed and all that stuff. But yeah, if they were to do it in before the offseason ends, this would be like the way to do it. Just come on in. I don't know where exactly the Orioles would spend, though, because they've already got now Corbin Burns. Their rotation's pretty filled out. If they wanted to build a super bullpen, well, Josh Hader's gone. I mean, I don't think you can do much about it now. I don't see someone like Cody Bellinger moving the needle. They have no need for someone like Matt Chapman. So maybe I'm just talking out of the side of my mouth in that it's Corbin Burns was the play. They did it. They're great. Hooray, Orioles.
It's just the other part of that, Grant. Like, I mean, we're talking about making a splash, and like, I know you're talking particularly about before the offseason ends, but like, I think we should extend that out too. Don't you think they're in position to take on money in trades right now?
That's a good point.
Right? Like, that's another way to kind of leverage your financial might is, and then by the way, that's a way to also mitigate whatever prospect capital you would have to burn in a trade like that, is that you just, you know, take on the freight. And so I think that is something that, off my earlier point, like if you see them get aggressive in that part of the market where, okay, here's a good player, there's a lot of contract here to eat or take on, you would think they'd be in the front of the line for that because it sort of serves dual purposes, right? Like you have the money, you can spend that, but you know, the more likely you are to, or more willing you are to spend actual dollars and cents, the less, you know, compelled you are to have to like expend prospect capital. So it just seems like that's a natural fit, especially given the timing of them, you know, again, changing ownership and like what we talked about, the momentum of wanting to, you know, establish right away that you're serious players about getting a winner on the field.
Do you have that page open? So if I start like...
I do.
All right. So what I'm focused on a lot is in the National League, you've got the Dodgers projected to win 101. Braves 101.7, so essentially 101. That's pretty impressive because projection systems, they're very conservative in a lot of these projections, win projections, just by definition. You know, they're not projecting a ton of outliers. So to have a system projecting 200 win teams is actually rare. And it speaks to how ridiculous those teams are. And then after that, it's a sea of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 NL teams between 78 and 85 wins. That just seems like as wide open as I can remember a field. And now we're talking three wild cards. I'm not making predictions this year because I'll get roasted. I'm gonna screw something up.
I was looking at it and like, I mean, how many teams? Washington is at 57.9. The Rocks at 58. Right? And then what's next? Freaking
Pirates.
Pittsburgh at 73, right? And like, I don't know, like once you're at that point, like, is it really that far a jump, like to outperform that, you know, and kind of like be in shouting distance? No, it's not. So it's the National League, aside from those quote unquote super teams, God, not much separating them when you really think about it. And, you know, what does that say? I'm not sure. I think I'm interested in this, right? Like, I mean, we're talking about super teams not too long ago. I mean, a couple other people and, you know, how much like that just isn't a guarantee of anything, right? Like, I mean, and we're seeing these projections and clearly these are two clubs loaded with great players, but I'm always like, I think I'm doubly impressed when a team that is projected to do this actually does it. Like, you know, there's this feeling from some people, oh, you expected that. And it's like in this sport, if you actually did what you were quote unquote expected to do, I feel like that is a much bigger deal than most would, you know, than the credit they get for that. Like you know, I think it's just extraordinarily difficult to actually play up to what you're supposed to do in this sport, given how long the season is, how much luck is involved, all the stuff we've talked about before.
I mean, if you think about it, the Dodgers, I don't remember what Pecota's projection was for them last offseason, but I would assume it's 100 wins. 100 wins, 101 wins, 99 wins, something like that. The Dodgers won 100 games. And they did that with 21 sort of iffy starts from Arias, Tony Gonsolin 20 starts of a five-year array before he's hurt. Syndergaard only lasted 12 starts. You go down the line, and it's players that the Dodgers were counting on in that rotation did not pan out, and they still just kind of cruise to that projection. And that speaks to how loaded that team was, how deep that team was, and how they were able to get guys coming in, whether it's Bobby Miller or you've got Emmett Sheehan, you know, to fill in and do some things here and there. But not every team's going to do that, but it feels like the Dodgers and Braves are just going to make stuff up. Like, that's what they're good at, just making crap up.
Well, look, man, like, we've talked about those clubs a lot. I mean, this is what well-run organizations look like, right? Like, that's what they look like. That, you know, we joke about the Braves extending all their guys, but, like, you know, to be able to do that, there has to be, I think, they have obviously given off this aura of being really competent and buttoned up in a place where you want to be, all right? Like, yeah, money talks and, like, taking risk away for the player is, like, I mean, I get that that's very attractive, but I also think that part of that is, like, do I want to commit to these people? Do I believe that they're going to treat me well, like, you know, put us in a position to win, all that stuff? Well, the Atlanta Braves keep proving that to be the case, right? This is what a well-run organization looks like. And so clearly, given how consistent the Dodgers have been about making it to the postseason, you know, how deep they've gone, they've won one, right? Like, and I know, like, you put an asterisk on that if you want, but they still won one. You know, they've certainly racked up pennants. Those things don't happen by accident. So I do. I think it is, you know, interesting that, you know, the numbers are showing basically what is, like, two well-run organizations, right? Like, that's what I see here. It's basically just, like, more confirmation of kind of what we've seen over the years, as you say, in particular with the Dodgers, when, dude, they were dealing with pitching issues, it felt like, from the jump.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I am gonna just go off script here. Pick Braves or Dodgers. Which one? Like, you're gonna put a sawbuck down on them at the beginning of the year to be the better team. Which one do you like a little better?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. It's against policy.
Oh, that's a good point. No. Okay, funny money. Yeah. If you had to put funny money down.
Some Monopoly money down? If I had to put some blue money down or whatever?
If, like, it was like some bet where you had to eat hot chicken or something.
I don't know. Like, I'd probably take the Dodgers.
I think I might take the Braves. I don't know if that's just bias coming through. I look at the bottom of the orders of their respective teams, and I like a little bit more of what the Braves. They seem like they're a little bit tougher to turn over. But again, we're talking 100-win teams, so what are we even doing here? Andy, Dodgers or Braves? Pick one.
Hey, guys. I've been listening to this dialogue for the past 15 minutes and not ferociously trying to chase a story. So I'm pretty locked in. Dodgers or Braves? I think I'm going to go Braves.
Yeah, you were the tiebreaker. We had Mark go Dodgers. I go
went
Braves.
Dodgers.
All right, explain yourself.
Well, I just that lineup is really good. I mean, who would their top three be? It'd be Acuna, Olsen, and
Riley, Albies.
Yeah, Riley. You know, so like, is that Freeman, Otani, Betts? No, but it's, you know, like, you can go to, you know, you feel pretty comfortable with those three guys. I think their depth, I think their youth still benefits them. They're still pretty young. I like their top end pitching. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Was this a stupid question?
No, I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting. I mean, I think that they're both, I think it's pretty clear that they're the two best teams in the sport right now. It'll be interesting to see what the Astros obviously Pecota, you know, loves them again, and they still have sort of the championship pedigree and all that stuff. I'm curious to see, like, with the Dodgers pitching, there's still a decent amount of uncertainty. Yamamoto is probably going to be pretty good. You know, I think that's a fair bet, but he's, you know, never pitched in the United States before, and so there will be adjustment there. You know, Tyler Glasnow has obviously dealt with a lot of injuries in his career. You know, Bobby Miller's never shouldered a full load. Walker Buehler's coming back from surgery. They've, you know, just re-signed Clayton Kershaw, but he's not going to be back till, you know, the middle of the summer most likely, and so, you know, just still, you know, they signed James Paxton, which is like, whoa, James Paxton, you know, he's pretty good, and then, but, you know, he's also fairly, you know, injury prone, and so there's a lot to like, obviously, about where the Dodgers are at, but there's still some of it you can, obviously, you have to pick some nits, because they're going to just beat the living hell out of a lot of teams. But we're asking who's the best team, and I think the Braves maybe have, I don't know, I think they're a little bit better, but I could very easily be wrong.
Yeah, all right. So there are eight teams in the NL that are between 80 and 85 wins, right? You've got the Phillies, the Mets, the Marlins, the Cardinals, the Cubs, the Diamondbacks, the Giants. Which of these teams should look at these projected standings? And I'm sure, to be very clear, they have their own internal models of this stuff. Like, this is not, they're not logging on to Baseball Prospectus and going, oh, jeepers, you know. They have some sense of where they think that they're at. Which team, though, should look at a muddled sort of wild card class in the National League and say, gosh, we can get this player and maybe someone else and really separate ourselves from the pack to a degree that's worth it?
The Giants.
Yeah, I was going to say, you want to say Giants.
I didn't.
Like, you teed us up to be like, the Giants!
Every episode, you're like, hey, is there a team out
that's
there?
That's not where I
that
was
could
going.
Really
However,
benefit from
I am
Aaron Judge.
No, but seriously, it's like if you're the, honestly, I'm thinking Cubs. You know, I'm looking at the Cubs and I'm going, okay, they kind of got to get Bellinger back at this point. Like, that just makes so much sense. They're right there. That Central is so up for grabs to the point where I think the Brewers are still in it, you know, despite trading Corbin Burns. I don't think that they're punting on the season necessarily. It seems like the teams in the Central is where I was going, smart Alec.
Dude, I had the same thought though, Andy. Like, I just didn't want to be a jerk. And so, like, you know, I'm glad you went in because, like, yeah, I'm like, this is a damn giant setup.
It's every week. Every week.
Since this is like Bags and Brisby, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. I think that the Cubs are the one who make the most sense outside of the Giants, and that the Cubs have demonstrated a willingness to, you know, sort of give out those type of contracts in a way that, like, yeah, would the Brewers be better if they signed Blake Snell? Yes. They're not going to sign Blake Snell, you know. So I think that, you know, the Cubs make a lot of sense in terms of, you know, reeling in one of these big four, you know, free agents remaining, the, you know, the four gentlemen repped by the Boris Corp. So, yeah, I mean, I would suspect that one of them will land in Chicago and maybe one of them will land in San Francisco. But, you know, who knows? It's February 6th. Like, we've been saying the same crap for, you know, the entire winter, and it hasn't changed yet.
Let me ask you this. With the Cardinals now projected to be at the top of the NL Central by a, you know, four-game margin, which isn't insubstantial or unsubstantial for projections, are we mad at them? Even more mad for going the Kyle Gibson, Lance Lynn route? You know, Sonny Gray was a great signing. We said that at the time. We think that now. Or are they oddly prescient? Are they oddly like, are they redeemed now because they're looking to be like a sturdy, hey, we're going to give our go in the Central kind of team?
Doesn't it feel like the latter? To me, it, like, my first impression's like, hey, man, you have done enough to distance yourselves from the competitors in your direct division.
Set a floor.
Doesn't that seem like kind of the assignment? Like, if you're approaching it the way they are, why not? Like, you're doing what you need to do. Like you said, it's not like 85.5 versus 80.2. It's not a, like you said, dude, not a small gap when it comes to these things. So
I think the counter would be, if you're, I hesitate to use the phrase long-suffering Cardinals fan. I think the counter would be, though, you're the Cardinals. Why are you aiming for 86 wins?
That's fair. I mean, and they've got not like a real fast closing window, but you've got Goldschmidt's 36 and Arenado's 33 or so. You know, you've got Wilson Contreras on a bigger deal, and he's not exactly getting younger. So it's not, they're still not the oldest team, but there is a little bit of a consideration for, we've got these guys now, and is Kyle Gibson really the person to push them over the top?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, like, look, the window is the primes of Goldschmidt and Arenado, and, you know, Goldschmidt is kind of on the other side of the mountain, you know, and Arenado is trending that way, and they can still be, you know, excellent players, and Goldschmidt was the MVP 2 years ago, but, yeah, and so you would want to sort of capitalize on that, especially when you still have this, like, core of younger players who you can kind of all, as you know, you can squint at all of them and be like, I don't know, that guy could be like a 4 or 5 win player, you know, and that's not even getting into the guys who are like sort of the top prospects of the, you know, the Jordan Walkers and the Mason Wins. I'm thinking more about, you know, like Brendan Donovan, you know, Lars Nootbaar, Nolan Gorman types, where you're kind of like, I think a lot of teams would probably be interested in players of that ilk, you know, on the sort of the controllable contracts they're on right now.
How about this American League, huh, fellas? Like, why do they like the Yankees so much? Why is Pecota always so cozy with the New York Yankees?
I think editor in chief Craig Goldstein, actually he moved. I think maybe got fired. No, he's still there. They say they have like the two best hitters in the American League projected, and that counts for an awful lot. And you know, it's hard to argue against that. I guess, you know, you've got Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, that makes up for lots and lots and lots, because those are two of the literal best hitters in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I think they were projected to win like 99 games last year, weren't they? Or they were projected to win the division last year, as I recall.
Fangraphs loved them. I mean,
Fangraphs did love them. I remember that, you know, we talked about this on the pod, where like I picked them over the Blue Jays because we all, you know, we thought the Blue Jays were kind of the ascendant team. And I was like, I don't know, like, the, you know, you look at the projections, the metrics love the Yankees, like, and they just won 99 games. Like, I think they'll do it again. And then, you know, that is what happened, right? I forget. So clearly, like, they have things, and we've talked about this over and over, that like their pitching program, like, does things that hit the right sort of bells to project out to future success. And that is often translated to future success on the, you know, the actual success on the field in terms of the pitching. The difference is that the, you know, the offense just got so injury, you know, ravaged last year. And yeah, I mean, like, I think if you have Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, that's a pretty great place to start when you are building a team. I think what their fans would, you know, push back at is you're still reliant on, you know, DJ LeMahieu and Giancarlo Stanton in a way that, you know, they're probably not thrilled about. You know, Anthony Rizzo's coming back from a major head injury, which, you know, you just don't know, you know, what's going on there. And so, yeah, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if they won the division again. They're not going to be a trendy pick, though, because, you know, the Orioles are coming off such a great season last year. And, you know, they just got Corbin Burns. And so, you know, as we all know, it'll probably be the Rays. We don't know why. We don't know how. But it will probably be the Tampa Bay Rays winning 97 games.
I will say that if you're looking at why Pecota likes the Yankees, a big part of it has to do with they think Carlos Rodon and Nestor Cortez are going to contribute and contribute a fair amount. And that might be your litmus test to, like, yeah, I'm buying that. You know, they're not projecting Rodon for 200 innings, but they are projecting for 125, which is that's closer to 200 innings than he usually gets. And then Cortez, he had a down year. He was hurt. They're projecting him to give 137 pretty quality innings. So possible Possible, likely, I don't know. But if you are just saying, yeah, you know what, some positive contributions from those two will go a long way, then I think you're buying what the projections are selling as regards to the Yankees. And if you're saying, no, one of those guys is going to be hurt and it's probably Rodon and that's not going to work, then you're not buying on the Yankees.
Right, correct. Right, and that's right. Why I'm not buying on that projection. I mean, I've said it, like, I think the Rodon deal was just whatever process that led to, it needs to be blown up. All right. Like, that was just a bad move from the jump. They have paid the price for it. They're going to continue to pay the price for it. Nestor Cortez is somebody who, you know, this guy's pitching with such guts, right? Like, and if you're living that way and then he's been hurt, like, it's hard to, you know, bank on that guy. It's a great story. And I don't want to take away from the success that he's had. Like, I mean, he's worked for that. And like, he's a skilled major league pitcher. Also, that's a tough way to live in this era. Right? Like, yeah, the kind of game that he has to pitch and whatever. There's a reason why it doesn't succeed often. It's extremely hard to do. All right. Now, he's done it. And I think you should, you know, there's some level of benefit of a doubt you build into that. But I think part of the trade-off of, you know, being that kind of pitcher in this era is that, you know, that if it goes sideways, like, it's hard to stem that sometimes. It's not like you don't have like the swing and miss to lean on. You don't have the big power stuff to lean on. That's why it was incredible when he was in the middle of doing this and having success. Like, you have to remember, like, that's really impressive. And it's clearly somebody that's pitching with a lot of guts. Hard to bet on it, though. So, you know, like, that's my thing. And again, especially with Nestor Cortez, I don't want to knock the guy. I'm just saying, you don't bet on dudes like that. That's why.
So I have a thought kind of related to Rodon, that's kind of in this vein. And I feel like I've talked about this often on the pod before. One of the things I really like about the Rangers going after Marcus Semien is that he is a player who in his career had been bad and made himself good. And then had kind of regressed, and then he had demonstrated the ability to make adjustments and remain sort of a good player, good to great player. And like that led me to believe that a person with his sort of skill set and, you know, intellect and athleticism and all those things, he could handle getting older. And you saw it even like 2 years ago, last year, like he was like the worst player in baseball, you know, for like a month or two. And then he finished the year and you had like, oh, wow, he had a 4-win season. Anyway. So I was thinking about that with regards to Rodon, right? Because, like, Rodon is a player who was he last year? He was a guy who was hurt and who was not very good. Who was Carlos Rodon in, like, 2019, 2020? He was a guy who was hurt and not very good. And he found a way to, you know, in 2021 and 22, you know, be one of the, you know, better pitchers in the sport. And so I was thinking, like, okay, apply that, you know, your what you like about Semien. Does that make sense? And I guess what I wonder is, like, is it just different with pitchers where like that, you know, where it's just like if it, when you get to 30 and the arm and body stops working, is it just like you just can't, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like you don't want to just, as soon as the guy starts to get hurt again and be like, oh, it's over, you know, because he's demonstrated he's been hurt and bad and all of a sudden he's like healthy and good. So you don't want to just immediately rule it out, but it does feel different for pitchers, right?
Well, I think it's also the age, right, Andy? Like, you know, the repeating that cycle gets so much harder as you get older, all right? And so, yes, like, you've been through it, and maybe there are some things that you learn about your body. And I believe that when you hear players say that they figure themselves out a little bit. But that said, I just think the challenge gets so much difficult. Yes, like, it's just because they're pitchers too. But, like, we're just talking about, man, it's hard to replicate.
Right. And he's entering his age 31 season, so...
There you go.
You know, you say age 31, and it's like on one hand, you're like, oof, well, you know, it's pretty old. But also, it's like, it's age 31. You know, it's not ancient. It's still, I don't know. It's within the realm of possibility that he's pretty good this year, I think.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing with what you're saying with pitchers is that what a lot of people don't realize is the margin of error for these pitchers too. The difference between Carlos Rodon's best slider and Carlos Rodon's slightly below average slider, it's a very fine line when it comes to pitching and mechanics and health and how you're feeling. It's not as if you need to be just like, oh, it's not like you've got a health meter in a video game and you need to be way over here to not have that good slider. It's like your health meter goes down, beep, and then all of a sudden, like, everything's exponential. So I think with pitchers, it's a little more like that. When you were talking about, I forgot we were talking about Rodon, and when you're talking about a player who's been bad and making himself better and coming back from the abyss like Semien, all of a sudden I was thinking like, yeah, Cody Bellinger, you know, like, yeah, you know, that shows some gumption. But Bellinger scares me because now he's such a different, like his strikeout rate went down by 50% or something, just bananas. Who does that? That shows A, that he's a freak, but B, he's the kind of freak who might reinvent himself next year. And it's like, you know, now I'm this kind of hitter. It's like a musician going like, oh, I'm not doing punk rock, I'm doing Zydeco, like, you know, sort of thing.
That was always a concern, I think it's fair to say, among Dodgers officials, is that you weren't totally sure what type of player you were going to get, you know, with Bellinger from year to year. I remember, you know, in 2020, like he was like making swing changes and spring training, and Dodgers people were like, he won the MVP last year, you know, but that just was kind of his nature. And so, and I think like when you look at, you know, he clearly like made adjustments last year to cut down on the whiffs and to like try and be better in two strike counts and demonstrated that he can make it work. And you can look at that, you know, in a couple of ways. You can look at that and go, wow, this player is like super, you know, versatile and able to make all these adjustments, blah, 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 you know. Or you could look at it as like, this guy is this age and still hasn't totally figured out who he wants to be as a hitter. And the general consensus of like, when you look at batted ball data like this, is you don't want to bet on it long term. And so that's the challenge, I think, in trying to, like, is this guy a freak athlete who can kind of do anything he wants on the baseball field? Or is he a guy who, you know, like, has dealt with a ton of injuries in the last few years and may have just had some really good batted ball luck in 2023?
I have no answers to that. I mean, I don't have a list. No. I mean, what I mean by that, I was going somewhere. Is that I don't have a list of, like, the most interesting free agents of the past 10, 20 years. But just off the top of my head, Bellinger, he's top five, top three. As far as guys, I don't know how excited I would be if the team I followed got him. I don't know how scared I would be. It's just fascinating. He's just a fascinating profile. You're never going to get that again. And then you add Boris into the mix, and it's like, oh, teams will have some good clay to work with. you know, it makes him extra fascinating.
Dude, the career arc. Fine, you know, like that's a top five career arc, like as far as like the interest up and downs, whatever you want to call it, like. And so yeah, I would agree with you, man, like as far as you know, upper end free agents that have had that kind of history, I don't know, like what comes to mind. I don't even know how, like who would compare there. So yeah, like it's certainly like that's a decision I don't envy, for sure. Like having to make sense of like those ups and downs.
All right, we're at the end. Super Bowl predictions. Come on.
The Chiefs are going to win. Like, you know this. And this is not like...
Because it's rigged for Taylor Swift?
That is funny, right? People really are losing their minds, you know?
It was just like this in baseball when Matt Kemp was dating Rihanna.
Have we talked about this? I think actually the Cespedes Barbecue Kids took my idea when I was like, who'd be the funniest baseball player to date Taylor Swift, and like the obvious answer is Pete Alonso. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the Chiefs are gonna win.
I think Jose Altuve would be pretty funny.
Maybe we did talk about this on the pod. Didn't Mark say like Mark said someone funny, like Heath Bell or something like that?
Yeah. Oh man, I think we did, and I have no remember. I don't have any.
Oh, it was producer Brian. It was Brian Vogelbach. Yeah.
There it is, Vogelbach.
Oh, what did I say his name was?
Brian, because you were saying producer Brian.
No, it's our producer, Brian Vogelbach.
Yeah.
I'm losing it, man. I'm sorry. This is going to be such a rough edit for Brian. I apologize.
That's all right. I mean, we're keeping him employed, right? You know, we're making it's job security that he's got to clean up this much crap.
And on that note,
Chiefs in seven.
We'll be back in 2 weeks, and we'll talk about baseball, Taylor Swift dating Jose Altuve, stuff like that. So we'll see you then.
I was very wrong.